Well, let's start with a prayer. All right. Let's start with a prayer. Father, I'm thankful that you brought the brothers and sisters from Bakersfield and from Phoenix together tonight. And God, I pray that we have some new friendships developed here. I'm thankful for this amazing group. It's so encouraging. God, I pray to help me to do a good job tonight of giving some information that could be useful. Help us, God, during this time to not stop at reaching out to our friends. I'm thankful for the guests who are here. And we offer this time in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, so I was asked to do a lesson related to the existence of God. All right, so what I'm going to do then is I'm going to share the screen, put up a PowerPoint, and you all know the drill, right? I see it. Oh, everybody turned off their microphone already, except Egypt. Hers is still on.
Okay, hold on.
Just whatever. All right, so I'm going to share screen. And if you know what you're doing, I think you can do a 50-50 screen thing or something like that. Okay, slideshow. Don't do that to me. No, stop doing that. I'm trying to get the slideshow to start. How do I start the slideshow? My thing is messing me up. There we go. There we go. All right, great. So, I was asked to give an argument for theism. And probably 20 or 30 years ago, if you went on a campus, or how about 40 years ago when I was baptized, I would say 95% of people believed in God. But now people who don't believe in God are becoming actually pretty common. And we need to be ready to have a good discussion about that. So so here's my outline. I'm going to provide atheist arguments against the existence of God. Then I'm going to explain why atheism fails. And then I'm going to give you arguments for theism. A few years ago, I was involved in a debate about the existence of God, and I was completely thrashed and utterly defeated in that debate. The reason is I took the position in that debate that God does not exist. My opponent was a senior in high school. He was valedictorian, pretty smart guy. And so the reason I'm mentioning that is if you want to have a reasonable discussion with somebody about a question like, why do you believe God exists, it's probably a good idea to know their position. In other words, a person who says that God doesn't exist, probably you should be able to give their argument. So I'm going to do that first. I'm going to present some of the reasons people use to say there is no God. All right, and these are the four arguments that I'm going to present. Like I said, I did this debate. We've actually done two debates. Our organization put on two debates on the existence of God. One involved Doug Jacoby and Michael Shermer, who is the head of the American Skeptic Society. And so I'll refer to that debate because that's an actual debate, an actual atheist. And I'll talk about the arguments that he used to defend the belief there is no God. So the four arguments against the existence of God I want to present to you are, number one, you can't see him. Number two, all the believers are hypocrites anyway. Number three, because of all the suffering in the world. And number four, atheism is the default position. All right, I'll explain those when I get to it, so don't worry if you don't understand those. Okay, point number one, some people say, I don't believe in God because I've never seen him. Famously, Yuri Gagarin, you may not know who he is, but he's the first human being in space. The year was something like 1960, 1959. He was a Russian guy. He went up to space, and he famously said, I've been up in space, and I didn't see God there. I guess he doesn't exist. Probably that's actually a quote from Nikita Khrushchev. But anyway, so basically it says, well, you know, everybody thinks God's up here. I've been up here. I didn't see him. So what should we say about this argument, you can't believe in God because you can't see him? You know, a lot of people say, I don't believe in God. And a good question to ask them is, well, tell me about this God you don't believe in. you know, I don't believe in a God who's up in the sky with, you know, white hair, who judges everybody, who's really angry. I don't believe in a God. And, you know, and then once they tell you about this God they don't believe in, you could say, well, I don't believe in that God either. No wonder you don't believe in God. All right, but what about this argument that you don't believe in God because you can't see them? All right, has anybody here ever seen an electron? I didn't think so. How many here believe that electrons are real? If you took a each of supposed to raise your hand. Come on. How many here believe that electrons are real? All right, yeah, good. She's raising her hand. Good. All right, why do you believe in electrons? Well, one possible reason you say is, I believe in electrons because my chemistry professor told me they exist. Well, that's not a very good reason to believe in anything, right? But the reason I believe in electrons is because I can measure properties that can only be explained if I invoke the existence of electrons. So if you say electrons don't exist, then you can't explain the properties of the elements. You can't explain the existence of molecules and stuff like that. How many have ever seen the wind? I've never seen the wind. So why do you believe in the wind? Because I can see the trees, the leaves swaying. Now, and the thing is, I suppose I could try to explain the swaying of the tree with something else other than the wind, but the fact is, what is observed is consistent with the idea that there is wind. So the fact that you can't see God, which, by the way, the Bible never claimed you could see him, correct? In fact, in Hebrews 11, verse 3, it says, by faith we know the things that are seen were created by an unseen God. And so the fact that you can't see something doesn't mean it doesn't exist. For example, can you see love? All right, you can't see it. So does that mean there's no such thing as love? Well, you can see the effects love has, can you not? All right? And so the bottom line is, this is not even an argument. This is literally not even an argument against the existence of God. And so the point I would make is, we believe in something because the properties we say they have are able to predict what can be observed. All right? And so if God exists, then the universe that we observe should be consistent with that proposition that God exists. And everything I know about the God of the Bible is completely consistent with reality as I know it. And as we look at some of these arguments later on in this talk, we'll see there are some facts about the universe which simply cannot be explained unless you allow for the existence of God. So every single thing I know about the universe is consistent with the existence of God. In fact, there are many things that can't be explained unless I invoke the existence of God. Therefore, I believe in God, just like I believe in an electron. By the way, until about 30 years ago, nobody had seen an atom. Everybody believed in atoms. And then through the work of IBM inventing the scanning tunneling microscope, we can now see atoms. So, very good. All right, a second argument, and I've heard this before, if you're on campus enough, you're going to hear this often, is obviously God is not real because all the people who believe in God are a bunch of hypocrites, a bunch of liars and dangerous people. I mean, consider the Crusades. Look at that. Look at all these Muslim fundamentalists, all these people who believe in God that are a bunch of whacked out crazy people. So obviously God doesn't exist. And again, my response to this is, to be honest with you, this is not even an argument. Now, I would agree that bad things have been done in the name of Jesus, no question about it. The Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, child abuse by priests, foolish political things have happened in the name of Jesus. But the fact is, those who do those such things are violating the very ethical things that Jesus taught. Would Jesus support the idea of going to war and fighting and killing people in his name? Obviously not. And the thing is, those who do immoral things, who don't believe in God, there's no reason based on their philosophy to say that what they're doing is immoral. But if Christians do evil things, what they're doing is they're violating the very things that the leader they propose to follow said. Now, if you're not going to believe in something because hypocrites believe in it, then you better not go into the grocery store because there's a bunch of gross hypocrites in the grocery store. You definitely better not go to the movies because almost everybody in that movie theater are hypocrites. All right. So really, again, I've heard this argument many times. Ah, they're all just a bunch of hypocrites. All right. I would say that that borders on not even being an argument at all. All right. The third argument, by the way, just so you know, I have been involved personally, and I have seen a number of debates on the existence of God. And I'm telling you, the ones I'm putting out here, these are pretty much the standard arguments you hear in any debate over the existence of God. So evidence that God doesn't exist is you can't see him, and Christians are a bunch of hypocrites. Now, my third argument, I have to say, is a pretty good argument. In fact, when we had this debate a few years ago with the high school student, the one that I lost, I played the role of the atheist. I played it straight up. I didn't back off at all. And I used this argument. And I'm telling you, when I finished giving this argument, a lot of people in the room, a lot of the kids were like, whoa, that's pretty convincing. And this argument is based on the existence of suffering. The argument goes something like this. You Christians believe in an all-powerful, omnipotent God who could do whatever he wants. Number one, yes or no? We say yes. You believe in a God of love. And God, in fact, a God who is so loving that love itself is defined by this God. Well, then how do you explain genocide? How do you explain a baby born with a horrible birth defect? In fact, if God is so powerful and so loving, why do we have the COVID-19 virus going on right now? Clearly, if God was powerful, he would stop it. Oh, so it must be that he doesn't really care. You can't have it both ways, Christian. Your God is an all-powerful God and an all-loving God. How do you explain all the suffering? How do you explain cancer? I mean, you can't have it both ways. Either there's cancer because God can't stop cancer, or because God doesn't care about cancer, one or the other. You know, this argument, I would say, at least it is a reasonable argument, you have to admit. In fact, I hope you've thought of this argument at least once in your life. I hope so, because this is something that I've thought about before. So how do we respond to this argument? So let me make sure you understand the argument. If God is all-powerful and all-loving, then the world that we live in is not consistent with that God because of cancer, because of murder, because of typhoons and earthquakes and all these things. All right, so I want to talk about that. Now, there's a few problems with this argument. Number one, there's an assumption here, which is that a loving, omniscient, omnipotent God ought to prevent suffering. I think this is a false premise. All right, so why is there suffering? Well, I believe there's a couple of reasons why there's suffering in the world. Number one, because God gave us free will. All right, so my question is, do you choose to believe in free will? All right, as far as I know, every human being I know of believes that we get to choose. All right, there's some fatalists, but never mind that. So here's the question is, why do we exist at all? According to the Bible, the reason we exist is because God wanted to love us. He wanted to us to love him, and he wanted us to love one another. That's basically what we learn in Genesis 2 and Genesis 3. But love gives a choice. In fact, can you make somebody love you? Can you force somebody to love you? The answer is, literally, you cannot. If you try to force somebody to love you, it doesn't work. My suggestion, if you're trying to get a boyfriend or girlfriend, don't push yourself on them. Give them plenty of space. Nobody wants to be manipulated into loving anybody. So God wanted us to love him. He wanted to love us, so he gave us a choice. That's why that's one of the reasons there's suffering. The bottom line is, God gave us a choice. We chose to rebel against him, and we brought all kinds of suffering into the world. All kinds. I would say the majority of all suffering in the world is because we rebelled against God. Our anger, our sexual immorality, our greed, our pride, our selfishness. This is the source of most suffering. All right. And so to the atheist, I would say, well, what's the alternative? That we're like robots or automatons? That we're like cockroaches or trees? By the way, everything God ever made obeys him. The only exception is people. Why? Because God is so powerful and God is so loving that he created the universe so that we could exist and be in a relationship with him. Now, by the way, that doesn't explain all suffering, because another cause of suffering is natural causes. For example, a few years ago, there was this massive tsunami off the coast of Sumatra. It killed over 200,000 people. Whose sin caused that? In John 9, there's a case of a man born blind, and the Jews asked, who sinned, him or his parents, that he was born blind? So not all suffering is the result of sin. There's also natural causes. So why did that tsunami happen? The reason that tsunami happened is because of plate tectonics. Well, why plate tectonics? Well, that's the universe that God created. Now, plate tectonics is a good thing, because without plate tectonics, we wouldn't have this massive recycling system. Otherwise, the minerals of the earth required for life to be sustained would be used up. We'd have a sterile earth. Also, if it weren't for plate tectonics, we would have no atmosphere. So if you want to be on a planet without plate tectonics, go to Mars. No plate tectonics, no atmosphere, sterile surface. I say, thank you, God, for plate tectonics. Now, if the atheist can envision a world that doesn't have plate tectonics, all right, great. Now, by the way, you also have to create this universe. I say plate tectonics is a good thing. And weather, you know, there's suffering caused because of tornadoes and hurricanes and stuff like that. But I say, thank you, God, for weather. In fact, I say, thank you, God, for bacteria. Because if it were not for bacteria, there'd be no oxygen in the air. There'd be no nitrogen in the air. We wouldn't have vitamin K. In fact, if you talk to a microbiologist, there are dozens of things that bacteria do, and without bacteria, we would not be alive. So the atheist says the existence of suffering proves there's no God, because you can't have it both ways. Either God is not powerful, and therefore he can't prevent it, or he's not loving, and so he doesn't care. My response to that is, you know, that is a good argument. But the fact is, the Christian God is so powerful and so loving that he made us so we could have a relationship with him, and he gave us a choice, and we rebelled and we sinned. All right? Now, the fourth argument against the existence of God is one that probably none of you would have thought of, which is this, that that atheism is the default position. I mentioned that we put on a debate, this was several years ago, with Michael Shermer, who's the head of the American Skeptic Society. I happen to know him personally. And he and Doug Jacoby. And he, in his defense of atheism, this was the only argument he used. He didn't use the argument from suffering, because he knew that Jacoby would be able to poke holes in that. He certainly didn't use the argument from hypocrisy, and he certainly didn't use the argument from, you know, you can't see him. And so in this debate, what Michael Shermer did was he made a lot of jokes. He made a lot of disrespectful comments about Christians. He threw out a lot of rhetoric and said a lot of stuff. He was used to debating young earth creationists. So he would say, yeah, you know, people believe the earth is only 6,000 years old. And on those points, Doug agreed with him entirely. In the end, his only argument was this: unless you can prove to me that God does exist, well, that means he doesn't exist. That was his argument. To that, I'd say, according to who is the default position that God does not exist? I'll tell you this. The vast majority of all well-trained, educated, intelligent people who have ever existed have believed in God. All right, so who says that that's the default position? I would say this really isn't even an argument at all. So we have four, I guess, arguments that are used. These are the classic arguments to defend atheism. Three of them are really not even arguments at all. They're just rhetoric. The fourth is an argument, the argument from suffering. But I would say The Christian explanation of suffering is a better explanation of suffering, I believe, than the atheist explanation, which is just random stuff. All right. Point number two. Why I believe atheism fails. Of course, one of the reasons atheism fails is that it can't explain itself. It's just simply inconsistent with reality. But a few more reasons I believe atheism fails. Number one, belief in atheism, bottom line, those who believe in atheism generally believe it through circular reasoning. I'll explain what I mean by that. Number two, atheism cannot answer any of the hard questions that people care about. And number three, atheism is a completely, utterly bankrupt philosophy. Let me talk about the first point, which is that atheism is based on circular reasoning. I've heard it said that science proves there's no such thing as a miracle. That's a nonsense argument, because science talks about things that are natural. And by definition, a miracle is a supernatural thing. In order to use science to prove that there is no transcendent reality, you'd have to be transcendent yourself. All right? There was a show on the BBC a few years ago in which it was like kind of like smart people on trial. So they had a panel of journalists and, you know, PhD smart people. And they brought in a theist and an atheist and asked them to kind of explain their position. And the way it worked is they would ask them questions. So this atheist comes in first, and he was so confident. He's like, man, I got this one. These guys are toast. So anyway, the one of the people in the panel asked him a question. Well, they asked him to make an opening statement. He said, the only things that are real are things that can be observed. And if they cannot be observed, then by definition, they're not real. Since you can't observe God, he's not real. Case closed. And then one of the panelists asked him, well, how do you know that? And he said, well, you know, all these Christians, they're a bunch of hypocrites. And, you know, they're, you know, everything they do, blah, 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 blah. And then the panelist said, excuse me, sir, I asked you a question. The question is this. You made the claim, your opening argument, which is that anything which cannot be observed is not real. And I asked you a question, which is, how do you know that? He says, well, you know, the Christian fundamentalists and the Muslims and all this religion and all the problems in the world that cause religion, blah, 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 blah. So the panelist said, okay, one more time. I asked you a question. If you want to answer the question, you can just step down and we'll just listen to the other guy. So here's the question. You said the only things that are real are things that can be observed through the scientific method. How do you know that? And he said, well, I guess I just believe it. Do you know why atheists believe there is no God? Because they believe there is no God. All right, now, you could ask them, well why? Why do they believe that? Well, I'll let the atheist answer that question. But God, by definition, exists outside of time and space. See, the only way we could prove that he doesn't exist is to essentially exist outside of time and space. All right? And so the bottom line is almost all arguments against the existence of God are based on the assumption that God doesn't exist. How do you know there are no miracles? Because there are no miracles. How do you know that there's a scientific explanation to the creation of the universe? Because I know there's a scientific explanation for everything. All right? How do you know that I don't exist other than chemicals? Because I know I don't exist other than chemicals. All right? So that's not a very good argument, in my opinion. Point number two, when it comes to the questions that people really care about, atheism really sucks at answering these questions. Excuse me, I can say that to young people. Don't tell an old person I said sucks. That's not a good word to them, but for us, it's cool. Anyway, so I teach a philosophy of science class, and that class has a mixture of atheists, agnostics, believers, really conservative Christians, Muslims, all kinds of people. And I talk about science and religion, and I make the point that there's a certain set of questions that science is really good at answering, And honestly, religion stinks at answering those questions. And then there's a different set of questions that science is really lousy at answering. Now, on your screen, you can see some questions that science is really good at answering, like, when did that happen? If you want to know when something happens, probably the Bible is not the place to go to. So when was the earth created? What is that thing? What's it composed of? Where is it? How many? How does that work? How does that function? All right, these are questions that I believe not only science is good at answering, I believe the scientific method is the best human means yet devised to answer the question of when did that happen? What's happening? Where is it? How many? How does that work? Great. I've got a question. Do you care about those questions? Do you care about, do you really in your heart of hearts care about when? Or how many? Or what is it? Or how does it work? I don't think so. Now I'm going to put up another set of questions. Why am I here? Is that the right thing to do? What is my purpose? Why does the universe exist? How valuable am I? Does God exist? Will God answer when I pray? Why is there evil? Science and atheism is a complete disaster in answering these questions. And I'm telling you, these are the questions that everybody cares about. Everybody wants to know why I'm here. Well, ask an atheist why we're here. Luck? Accident? Chance? Well, that really gets me going. What is my value? Well, according to science, your value is probably about $6 or $7. You know, there's some carbon, there's some magnesium, some calcium. See, science doesn't attach value. According to Christianity, you and I are more valuable than the entire world. And the fact is, even the atheist knows that. Even the atheist in the heart of hearts knows that they have infinite worth. And yet their official philosophy is a few bucks. You can't even establish that. Is that the right thing to do? See, that's a moral question. I'll talk about moral questions in a little while. But atheism doesn't answer that question. Justice. What's the meaning of justice? If atheism is your philosophy, then justice is literally an undefinable word. It's a concept that has no real actual meaning. You know, if atheism is true, I tell you right now, you don't exist. I'm telling you, let me say that again. If atheism is true, then you don't exist. What do I mean by that? I say, I want to go to the store. Well, what's that mean? Because if atheism is true, then what am I? I'm a sack of chemicals and electrical signals moving around in a processing machine. If atheism is right, then you have no inherent value. There's no purpose to your life other than perhaps to create as many copies of your DNA as possible. Think about that, because really that's purpose. If we take evolution as a source of purpose, imagine if your purpose is to create as many copies of your DNA as possible. What could you justify if that were the case? Think about that. If atheism is right, then life has no value. Justice is a meaningless word. And by the way, don't tell somebody you love them. Because love, according to the atheist, is a word that has no real actual meaning. Instead of saying to somebody, I love you, you should say, I neurotransmitter you. Right now, the hormones being released in my brain and the electrical signals that are firing are creating this sensation that I apply the word love to, but really love itself has no meaning. And so if atheism is right, then none of the questions that anybody actually cares about have any answers that satisfy in any way whatsoever. So reasons that atheism fails. Number one, Because the bottom line is, belief in atheism, at the end of the day, it's based on, I assume it's true, and therefore, I conclude it's true. Which is a pretty lousy basis for a philosophy. Number two, atheism is a terrible, bankrupt philosophy that doesn't answer any of the questions that people care about. Point number three, atheism has been tried and it failed. There have been a number of times in history when societies have chosen atheism as the philosophical basis for their government. Examples are France in 1789 in the French Revolution, Russia and the Russian Revolution in 1917, China in the Communist Revolution in China in 1949, Pol Pot tried it in Cambodia, North Korea is applying. Every single society in history that has chosen atheism as sort of the working model for its view of the world, well, you can judge for yourself how that worked. Atheism is a world in which there is no moral absolute, in which there's no purpose to life, in which justice is a meaningless word, in which love is really just chemicals. You know what? I reject atheism utterly. Okay, now I'm not going to spend much time on this because I want to have questions and stuff. I'm going to present a few very, very brief arguments for the opposite of that, which is biblical theism. By the way, there's really three positions. There's atheism, deism, and theism. Deism is not a common view, a position today, but in the 1700s and 1800s, deism was a pretty popular view. It's the idea of the universe having been created, because given the design of the universe, it's obvious it was created. But deism says that creator is not involved in the world. It's kind of like Isaac Newton, who created the idea of the mechanical universe. So basically, the universe is like a machine that God wound up and he left it to function on its own. Theism is the proposition of a God who is active in the world, who's involved in the world. So I'm going to make several arguments for biblical theism. Those are the moral argument, the cosmological argument, the teleological argument. You can see a few others, the ontological argument, argument for desire, argument for experience. I'm not going to go into all those. I'm just going to present the first three arguments. Now, these arguments are based on premises. So we'll start with the premises. We'll make an argument. We'll reach a conclusion. And the validity of the argument is based on the validity of the premise. Okay, the premise for atheism is that atheism is true, essentially. By the way, just you know, just in case you're wondering, you cannot prove the existence of God. You can't do it. You simply can't do it. You can see on the screen there, that's a semi-joke there, but the bottom line is you can't prove the existence of God in the way you can prove that the angles of an equilateral triangle are equal, or that 1 + 1 = 2, or the number pi describes the ratio between the diameter and the circumference of a circle. You can't prove the existence of God. All you can really do is you can say, which explains reality as it is? The things we know about the human condition, about the universe, which is more consistent with those facts? The existence of God or the non-existence of God? And I believe that a sane person who's just doing a reasonable analysis of the knowledge we have will conclude almost certainly that God exists, okay? And that's the best you can do, by the way, just so you know. So don't tell anybody you can prove the existence of God, because if they're smart, they're going to know right away you don't know what you're talking about. So I'm going to present, like I said, three arguments. The first one is the moral argument. And the question is this. Is there moral truth? For example, is it wrong to murder? Is it wrong to commit rape? Is it wrong for a husband to beat his wife? All right. And so if the answer to that question is yes, that is wrong, then you've just proved that God exists. Okay? The premise of this argument is that there exists absolute moral truth. And that's the premise. The premise is absolute moral truth exists. In other words, there are things that are right, there are things that are wrong. By the way, ethics is one thing, morality is another. By the way, atheists can behave ethically. Ethics exists in an atheist world because ethics involves essentially what is the better choice. Ethics involves a pro and con. It involves sort of a counting of the good and the bad result of any action. So an action can be ethical, but according to atheism, an action literally cannot be moral because morality implies an authority saying. So if it's wrong to murder, why is it wrong to murder? Because it's wrong to murder. Well, where does such authority come from? So we have to ask ourselves, is it true that absolute moral truth exists and is real? If so, such laws, such moral laws, have to come from an overarching authority of some sort. Well, by definition, that overarching authority is God, because it's certainly not human beings. If there is moral truth, what is the source of that moral truth? By definition, it would be a supernal being. If that argument is false, then justice is a meaningless word. And when you say that that it's wrong to lie or to kill or to rape, then what's the basis for that? That's just an opinion. You could say it's not advantageous. You could say that it does more harm than good. But if it is wrong to rape somebody, then God exists. Okay, this is a strong argument. Now, you may not convince an atheist of that because they may be sort of trenched in. But I'll tell you, if you have a long enough discussion with an atheist, they'll tell you, that's wrong. You shouldn't do that. If an atheist ever tells you you shouldn't do that, throw that back on them. What do you mean I shouldn't do that? So you're saying God exists? Because if I shouldn't do that, that means it's wrong to do that. And if it's wrong to do that, then there's a source of truth. There's a moral authority saying that that's wrong. What is that source? So please stop talking to me that way because you're being inconsistent with your own philosophy. All right. I believe the moral argument is a powerful argument. I happen to believe it. So here, another slide, kind of the summary here. That moral absolute exists implies a source of moral authority, which is, by definition, God. Do the words good, evil, right, and wrong have any objective meaning at all? Does the word right and wrong, good and evil, do those words even have any actual meaning? If so, then God exists. All right? The alternatives is in a moral world. Okay, next is the cosmological argument. Now, bear with me. Of the three arguments, this is probably the most sort of esoteric, if you will. So here's the premise. Everything which exists has a cause. All right, here's something. All right, my recorder. This was caused to exist. This paper was caused to exist. In fact, literally everything that exists, life was caused. I mean, you know, you have food and all that kind of stuff. The universe exists. Therefore, the universe was caused to exist. And that cause is God. That's the cosmological argument. Now, I'll tell you right now, probably if you were to walk around on campus and say, I want to present to you the cosmological argument, probably you're not going to get a lot of baptisms next month by presenting the cosmological argument, honestly. In fact, I would say the vast majority of people who believe in God for reasons that have nothing to do with my presentation tonight, honestly. They believe in God because it's obvious. They believe in God because they understand morality is real just inherently. They believe in God because of relationship. They believe in God for a number of reasons. Now, by the way, just, you know, this argument has at least one hole in it. Because believe it or not, there are things that you could argue exists which were not created. For example, the number pi. Who created the number pi? All right. Now, did God invent pi? Because I'll tell you, all circles have the formula C equals pi times D. How about the number 2? Did God create the number 2? All right, so those who know what they're talking about, when they're presented with a causal argument, they'll sort of throw this dust into the air. So a second version of the cosmological argument, which a big fan of this is William Lane Craig. You may have heard of William Lane Craig, a philosopher and Christian. Anyway, the argument is this: everything which begins to exist has a cause. The universe began to exist, therefore the universe was caused, and that cause is God. All right, and so did pi begin to exist? No. Did the number 2 begin to exist? So everything that began to exist was caused. And I'm telling you, I've never heard of anybody who's ever even proposed an exception to this rule. Oh, the only thing is, of course, the universe, which they just throw it out there as kind of like a ad hoc argument. All right, so the bottom line is everything that begins to exist. Does the atheist believe the universe began to exist? Every atheist I know believes that. By the way, the Bible says it as well in Hebrews 11, verse 3. It proposes that the universe began to exist. And so, as far as I know, I've never heard anybody refute this argument. They just basically ignore it. The bottom line is the atheist has no exceptions to this. There is literally nothing that exists that began to exist which was not caused. They have no exceptions. They can't give an exception. They don't have any exceptions. I've read their stuff. So what do they do with this argument? Ignore it, I guess. I don't know. The third argument I want to present is the teleological argument, the argument from design. There's this thing called the anthropic principle. The anthropic principle is an explanation of the observed reality. For example, why is it that water exists and has the properties it has? Why is it that gravity has the force that it does? And why is it that iron has the properties that it has? And why is it that hydrogen has the properties it has? And the only answer I've ever heard to answer that question of why the universe has the properties it has is so that we could be here. That's called the anthropic principle. All right, and so is there evidence of design? Because this is the argument from design. If the universe has evidence for design, then there's a designer. And by definition, that designer of the universe would be God. And you could ask an atheist, why does the universe exist? I mean, why? You know, why does it exist? And then you could ask, why does it have the properties that it has? Now, I could spend an hour on this one. I'm just going to give one example. Maybe I'll throw in a couple others because I can't help it. And that is the existence of gravity. A good question is, all right, why is there gravity? The atheist says, because there is. That's your answer to why there's gravity? Because if they say so that we can have stars and planets, then they're implying that there's a God. Now, you can see that number. It's 59 zeros and a 1. It turns out scientists who tried to model this thing that we call the Big Bang, what they discovered is if the force of gravity had been weaker than it is by that fraction, then galaxies and stars and planets would never have formed. On the other hand, if the force of gravity was larger than it actually is, by that same fraction, the universe would have collapsed almost as soon as it was created. So let's assume that gravity exists, which is a big assumption, because the atheist can't explain why it exists at all. It just does. Just because. Why does the force of gravity have the value that it has? Like, how can you explain that? And the answer is, because we're lucky. That's pretty good luck. In fact, if you were to win the big lotto, that would be about 9 zeros and a 1. But the probability of you winning the big lotto 6 times in a row is roughly the probability that the force of gravity would have the correct value if it were to be randomly assigned by some random creation event. The bottom line is that the universe is designed is one of the most obvious facts of existence. I'm telling you, those who deny the design in our creation, I don't know how they do it. Again, I could go on and on for an hour about this. The dozens of facts, known facts, that are, if you change them just the slightest bit, we wouldn't be here. And the evidence for design, I believe, is absolutely overwhelming. The way God put it in Romans 1:20 is the existence of God is obvious. And I would say the scientist has the least excuse. All right. So I could, and anyway, there's a bunch of slides here about fine-tuning. The argument from the ontological argument, look that one up. Some people think that's the great argument, whatever. Argument from desire, C.S. Lewis. Every desire we have corresponds to an actual thing that exists. People desire God, God exists. The evidence from lives that are changed. I believe probably more people believe in God because of the lives of believers than perhaps any other reason. Not because of the ontological argument, that's for sure. Another argument for the existence of God is the inspiration of the Bible. Now, if you have 5 spare hours, I'll get started on all the reasons I believe the Bible is absolutely inspired. All right, so that's my argument for the existence of God. Hopefully, you now actually believe in God, but I think most of you probably already did. All right, so what we're going to do here is we're going to stop sharing the screen, and I'll take some questions. Probably keep your speaker off for now unless you have a question. You don't have to raise your hand. Just, you know, turn on your microphone and ask a question. And then we'll have fellowship in a few minutes. I especially want Bakersfield and Phoenix to talk. But anyway, any questions? Is that Juan Bautista?
It is.
All right.
So something that I've been kind of thinking about lately is like you touched on it on what God is not seen. And one of those things is for people that are sort of seeking evidence for God, like they want to believe in God, but they can't because he hasn't quote-unquote revealed himself to them.
Right.
You know, like why do people like that not have a quote unquote road to Damascus moment like Paul did?
Right.
Paul
yeah.
Road to Damascus. That's something that I've been struggling with.
Yeah. See, I believe that God does not try to force people to believe in him. You know, one of the things Jesus did a lot of miracles. But he didn't do miracles in order to get people to believe in him. God does not try to manipulate us into believing. He could drop notes out of the sky with your name written on it, believe in me. All right, but God gave us free will. I believe that the evidence for God is absolutely overwhelming. But God does not try to prove he exists, because if he were to try to prove to unbelievers that he exists, then he would remove their freedom of choice. All right. And so so God does not do miracles willy-nilly. All right. God does not do miracles just to get our attention. So I suggest you don't pray for God to change the light to green so you can get to work on time, because it just doesn't work that way. I can see how this is an existential problem for people, but I would turn that around. I would say, all right, so here's reality. The two explanations of reality are God does not exist or God does exist. Now let's talk about moral truth. Let's talk about the argument from design. Let's talk about the cosmological argument, and then let's talk about atheism. Which is the more adequate explanation of the facts of existence? And anyway, like I've already said, generally people who come to believe in God do not come to believe in God because of these reasons. All right? But some will. For myself, I claimed I was an atheist in college, and one of the reasons I came to believe in God is because of studying science. But I would say I'm a 1 in 50 person on that. Okay? So this person's existential problem is one we can't solve. But I think we can explain that. God is not in the, rescue business for people who are struggling.
Thank you.
Right? Any other questions? Hi, Chloe.
Times when we're like studying the Bible with people, or these kind of people who are atheists or kind of make these arguments or whatever, there's almost a point at which like arguing with them is not like worth it, because they're kind of stuck in their ways and they're not gonna like change their mind or start to think differently. So at what point do you kind of like choose to walk away, I guess, if that makes sense, for the sake of?
I don't know when you walk away, but I would say leave something in their mind as they walk away. Do your best to implant a thought in their mind that maybe will pop up later. So I would say everybody's different. You know, what's going to work with one person is not going to work with somebody else. All right, but you could say, well, what you could do is maybe do a study on the prophecies of the Messiah, because in the Old Testament it says the Messiah is going to come from Bethlehem. He's going to be raised in the region of Galilee. He's going to be betrayed for 30 pieces of silver. He's going to come to Jerusalem in about 30 AD. He's going to be crucified. None of his bones will be broken. And we could look at that and say, I don't know, can you explain these things? So maybe you can play off on their pride a little bit. So if you're convinced, would you be willing? I mean, if you're so convinced, would you be willing to just do this one study with me on the messianic prophecies? Maybe that would work. Another possibility is to say, you know what? I believe that rational people will conclude that this universe is designed. In fact, every single thing I know about the universe is consistent with it being designed. Hey, I just want to leave that thought with you. But I agree, arguing is a waste of time. That's one of the reasons, although we put on a number of debates, I kind of stopped putting on debates, because I just wonder if they have as much value as we think. The Bible even discourages us from getting involved in arguments. I think making an argument is one thing. Getting an argument is another thing. Yep. Leave them with something. You know what I'm saying?
I have a question, John.
Hey, Anthony.
Well, it's Rusty, actually.
Oh, see, Anthony was chewing gum, I think. Are you chewing gum, Anthony?
Sometimes Anthony tries to speak over me.
Yeah, all right.
He'll try to lip sync. All right. It doesn't work. Give it up, Anthony. My question, to me, that, if I remember right, I don't know if I'm explaining this right, but that 0.00001, that's the gravitational constant. Was that?
No, that's not the constant. Okay.
So that's not the constant.
So two questions for an atheist. Number one, why is there gravity? You know, the big W, why, is questions that atheists literally can't answer. So why is there gravity? Why does it even exist? Why does anything exist? Silence. Okay, good. Next question. All right, let's just accept that gravity does indeed exist for reasons that we can't explain. Why does gravity have the value that it has? Because here's the fact. If you were to adjust it by 1 part in 10 to the 60th, all right, this is the tiniest conceivable. You cannot change it. Let's say you've got you're tuning a something. You cannot tune something by that small an amount. Nothing can be tuned to that precision. All right, but the fact is, if the current force of gravity is that is what it is, if it were to change by 1 part in 10 to the 60th in either direction, then there would be no life. So a good question is, okay, how can you explain to me why it's so precisely tuned? And of course, they have no answer. That's why atheists invented this multiverse idea. You might have heard of the multiverse.
That's part of my question.
But that's really not even an answer. That's what I call an ad hoc argument. In other words, nobody would have proposed the multiverse if it were not for the fine tuning of the universe.
Well, that's what I'm kind of asking. So in my mind, okay, that constant, because if I remember right, it's like if it was this minuscule amount higher, the Big Bang would have spread out too quickly to form
right.
planets and stars
right.
and that sort of thing. If it was that much higher, then it would have collapsed back
right.
on itself.
Right.
Like,
That plus about 100 other arguments, sure.
Plus other things.
Yeah.
I'm not a scientist, but so, you know, you hear things, yeah, that there are multiple dimensions now, that there are multiple...
No, not multiple dimensions, multiple universes.
Oh, universes.
Multiple dimensions doesn't solve this problem at all. Multiple universes. Right, let me talk about the multiverse theory, okay? First of all, they shouldn't call it the multiverse theory. They should call it the multiverse speculation. A scientific theory, by definition, has to be testable by experiment, and it has to be disprovable by experiment. A theory which cannot be tested and which cannot be refuted by any experiment is, by definition, not even a theory. And the multiverse theory completely fails on both accounts. It is what I would call an ad hoc theory. In other words, the only reason this theory exists is to answer a philosophical problem, which is the apparent design of the universe.
Yeah.
And so nobody believes in it because of evidence for it. There is no evidence for it. There's none whatsoever. All right? This is an ad hoc theory, which is, I believe, is not even a scientific theory. It's just somebody throwing dust in the air to take attention away from the reality of the situation. Right. Even Michael Shermer rates that theory and a very, very as essentially being non-scientific. Even Michael Shermer agrees with that. Yeah.
Have you heard of the quantum mechanical version of the multiverse?
Sure. Go to my website. I talk about that. I've answered that question a couple of times. Right. So the idea is that quantum mechanics tells us that particles can come into existence and out of existence from essentially nothing. All right. So the argument is, well, that's how the universe came to exist. Well, first of all, although it is true that it seems to be true that, so for example, photons come into existence from a vacuum, but a vacuum is not nothing. In other words, it comes into existence within an existing universe. All right, and so therefore, although quantum mechanics does posit the idea of spontaneous creation of particles, all right, those particles are created within a universe with fields that already exist. And so And so this is not an argument for the existence of everything from nothing. It's the argument from the existence of things from a universe which exists with these quantum nature that allows these things to exist. In fact, these things have to exist. In a quantum mechanical universe, these particles have to exist. They can't not exist. That explains things like stimulated emission, a bunch of stuff in physics that can't really be explained without quantum mechanics. So, you know, this is an interesting sounding argument. It sounds like a great argument, but if you look at it, it's really, it's just a great way to confuse people to understand quantum mechanics. By the way, my PhD is in quantum mechanics, just so you know. So I know quantum mechanics pretty well. My PhD essentially is in quantum mechanics. So I know a little bit about quantum mechanics.
Sorry.
What's that?
Why do we observe one outcome of that? And that kind of, at least from what I was reading, points to a sort of cosmological consciousness that collapses that wave function.
Okay.
For everything.
You lost everybody. Now, again, that's an argument by analogy. What that person is doing there is they're making an argument on analogy. And an argument by analogy is really not an argument. The fact that two things are analogous and one is true does not make the other one true. And that argument is an argument from analogy. Entanglement. What's that mean? Okay. Now, if you have that, could you forward that article to me so I can maybe look at it a little bit more carefully and maybe reflect on it?
Yeah, sure.
Honestly, I'm shooting from the hip on that one. But even an argument for the existence of God based on analogy is an argument that I don't think we should use. I've had a number of people try throughout, hey, what about this argument for the existence of God? And I look at it, I go, that's a lousy argument. I mean, an atheist is going to laugh at that. All right, so if we're, I'll look at it, okay, and I'll write back to you, okay? I know one thing for sure is nobody else in this room was understanding what you just said. All right, so let's... All right,
not
sure.
Related to anything I just said.
All right.
So we've looked at like evidence for God. Do you have any pointers or like general sort of evidences in your head about the evidence for the God of the Bible?
Sure. Read my book, Reasons for Belief. Whole book on that. All right. And go to my website. There's hundreds and hundreds of articles on that. I'm just let me throw one out there. Okay. Psalm 22, verse 18. They have pierced my hands and my feet. I can count all my bones. They devoured my garments among them and cast lots for my clothing. 1000 BC, at a time when crucifixion didn't even exist. Zechariah 11, about 13. Throw it to the potter, the handsome price at which they priced me, 30 pieces of silver. Micah 5, 1. But you, Bethlehem Ephrathah, though you are small among the clans, etc. Isaiah 9, in the past he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future he will honor Galilee of the Gentiles. He will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Prince of Peace. What about in Isaiah 53 it says he will be pierced for our transgressions. Etc. What about Daniel chapter 9, verse 24 and 25, which, based on a decree of Artaxerxes, predicts the coming of the Messiah to Jerusalem in 30 AD in Jerusalem? What about, that's pretty good argument for the inspiration of the Bible. What about the scientific reliability of the Bible? What about the historical and archaeological reliability of the Bible? What about, there's many, many arguments for the inspiration of the Bible. All right, but those are separate arguments. The bottom line is, the argument I presented tonight really is more of an argument for, it's almost as much an argument for deism as it is an argument for theism. Okay, honestly. So for theism, I think we have to go in other directions. To establish that there's a God who actually interacts with human beings, that's a different area of evidence. But I would say the resurrection of Jesus, the argument for the resurrection is very, very, very strong. The argument for miracles in the New Testament being true and real, that's another one. Okay. Get my book, Reasons for Belief.
Thank you.
Sure.
I've got a quick question.
Willie.
New people are sharing their faith on campus and they meet an atheist and they're asking them to come to Bible talk or something like that and they say, I'm an atheist. And then they go, I don't know what to do. So what would be kind of your advice on what they could do at that point when they meet an atheist to help them either get into Bible study, have deeper conversation,
yeah.
Like what would be the next step?
There's no one answer to that because everybody's different. I would say prove to them that you're willing to listen to them. Prove to them that you understand their perspective. Have a conversation in which you can find common ground, maybe on things related to ethics or social justice. Try to find common ground. Ask them to suggest a book that you could read. What? Tell me a book you would like me to read. Cool. Now, here's the book I want you to read. I don't see, some of them just want to blow you off and don't want to talk to you, in which case, well, don't waste your time. But I think, you know, at Bakersfield College, we have this table. We just sit at, well, not anymore, rats. And I'm telling you, we have atheists coming up there. We have all kinds of conversations. And I'd say, you know, engage in a real conversation. Don't try to convert them right away. Have a conversation as equals. And listen to what they have to say. Ask good questions. Ask them why they believe in that and let them just say it. You know, don't try to disprove it right away. Make them feel safe to have a discussion. But if you could convince them to maybe read a book. And I tell you, if you would read a book that they suggest, they might be more willing to read a book that you suggest. I would say understand their perspective. If you want to have a conversation with an atheist, you ought to be able to defend their viewpoint. That's why this lesson tonight I think could be helpful. Because you could say, you know, I've talked to a bunch of atheists. You know, one of the arguments they use is the argument from suffering, the fact that it seems really hard to believe in a God who loves and is powerful, given, you know, and others present one of their arguments. And don't refute it right away. Don't come across like a know-it-all.
Is there a book you would suggest that you would have them read?
No. Reasons for Belief.
There you go.
Anybody reads that book and denies that God is real, I don't know. I don't get it. I don't know. I don't know where that person's coming from. But I would say another one is Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. I would say outside of the stuff I wrote, which I probably shouldn't be promoting, I guess, I would say Mere Christianity it's really, really awesome. Very readable. Say, I got a book by the guy who wrote Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. You know that guy? You know that guy? Yeah. He's a real good author. He gives very plain arguments. Another one I suggest is The Language of God. It's written by Francis Collins. He's the head of the National Institutes of Health. And by the way, he is a Mere Christianity believer. In other words, he was an atheist to whom a friend handed a copy of Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. And that through reading that book and thinking about it, he became a believer and later a Christian. So Francis Collins, who wrote the book The Language of God, that's a good one because it talks about evolution from a perspective of, well, yeah, obviously evolution, duh. That's another suggestion. So should we start the fellowship? All right. Yeah, let's start. Kayla says, yeah, let's just have fun. Let's start fellowship. All right, everybody, turn on your microphones. Free for all time.
Hey, John.
Yeah.
Before we do that, can you, I can type it, but would you mind if we put like your email address in here or something? If people have more questions that they'd like to.
Yeah, they just go to my website. If you go to my website, I've answered 3,000 questions. I answer every question. Sure. Put up my website, put up my email address, my phone number, whatever. Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
Also, real quick, can I ask a favor of everybody? Okay. Today, my baby sister turns 18. Can we
Cammy.
All go say happy birthday to her?
Sure. This is Cammy, by the way.
Yes, her name is Cammy.
We're putting Cammy on the camera. This is going to be the worst rendition of Happy Birthday ever.
It's not as impactful if you're muted, by the way.
Yes, unmute.
Muted, you like.
Are we
singing or are we saying Happy Birthday?
No, we're singing it.
Yes.
Yes.
No.
What?
We shouldn't sing.
I just want to hear, like, if you want to sing Happy Birthday at once.
Happy Birthday.
Who should sing it?
Is she coming?
She'd give it a try.
You have to.
What's her name?
You start strumming along.
Cammy is Cammy.
Cammy.
Yes, sir.
She has the big 1-8, huh?
Happy birthday
to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Cammy. Happy birthday to you.
Yes.
18. Wow, you're an adult.
She was older than me.
No. This is Cammy, her young. You're thinking
oh,
of
I was thinking
Carly.
God.
Kaylee, Carly, and Cammy.
Welcome.
By the way, I'm going to post this recording, the PowerPoint, at my website.